Welcome back to Observations. We're with Roy and Frank. And Roy, if you could continue on with your microevolution talk.
Certainly will. Frank, I understand that you didn't hear very much of what I'd said beforehand. So the problem that I think that we have at the moment is that the front-loaded design is very compelling. That is to say that Yah had put into the genetic code right from the very beginning, either at the point when the Earth was just cool enough to support life, or at the Cambrian explosion when the 30-odd phyla that were present came into existence. The problem that we have is that there's no continuous species change in the rocks to be found in evolution from the geological point of view. That is to say, you can't go from organism A to organism B through a very small change to organism C to a small change and so forth, all the way up to us. Even though it is possible to front load the DNA using sexual reproduction and the actual chemistry of the DNA to be able to do that, to defeat the effects of thermodynamics. But you also require chaos to do that. The problem that we have in the rocks is that we don't have any kind of evidence, for example, that there's monkeys were down at the time of the Cambrian explosion. So that means that either front-loaded evolution is true, that is to say that, in fact, somehow or another, the evolutionary process continued from the time of the Cambrian explosion upwards, apparently against the laws of thermodynamics, to produce us as humans, or Yah intervened along the way to redirect evolution or recreate, if you like, organisms such that eventually we would be thrown up as well. We do know that humans have been around for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, long before Adam was given the neshama. But I think there's a fundamental problem here in that we can't resolve the absence of the sequence of events that should have occurred versus what we actually see, even explained by what are called jumps in chaos from islands of stability to chaos and back to islands of stability.
Well, Roy, don't we actually see that in the record when we see that there was no man with Nisama, even though we can't show that he's different than humanoid in a skeletal record, but we actually show that Yah intervened at a point and created mankind with Nisama as opposed to mankind without.
Well, that's true, but did he create the mankind without, or did we just simply evolve from apes? That is the ultimate question, I think. The point I'm trying to make is that Mike Jean's ideas of front-loading evolution explains a lot of what we see, but not all of it.
Right.
And I think Craig has touched on that point there, that there's no continuous series of changes in the rocks that would be demanded, or I should expect to see if, in fact, that form of evolution did occur. The only exception to that would be something that really is a hypothesis of mine, and I've not seen it expressed anywhere else, but if you've ever seen what chaos theory does, it explains why you can have a chaotic event, and I use the example of a stream, you know, flowing over rocks. And if you have a look at that, every so often in that stream, maybe even moving along with the stream, there's an area of stillness in it. It's an area of where everything that's going around it doesn't seem to affect it. And I think that if you extrapolate that then into genetics, that you have an area of gene stability apparently against the laws of thermodynamics, and then that gene stability slowly erodes with the laws of thermodynamics until organism goes extinct. Now, the problem then is how do you get another one to come along that is materially different? That is to say, right, that you don't have a series of little jumps between them.
Right.
That I think is a fundamental issue, and I think Craig has illustrated that quite well today. But he's also got a problem that if Yah created the system right back at the beginning of the Cambrian period. Why don't we see fossils of monkeys, for example, or elephants, or horses, you know, whatever. We just don't see them in rocks of that age. So there has to be some explanation for what we're seeing. And I suspect that in fact it's a combination of front loading of the DNA, of the genome, combined with islands of stability and chaos.
Now, is it possible that Yah, being the creative genius that he is, as he's seen the evolution of Earth and all of the creatures and plants and so on and so forth, that sees that there's a need for different types that could be created for man at a different space in time of creation, as opposed to would give an example of why they weren't showing in the early fossil record?
Well, no. I'm not quite sure what you're meaning by that. Can you explain that?
I'm not sure if I know. I was saying that is it possible that Yah created other species like what he did in creating mankind with Nisama sporadically somewhere during the evolution that we're talking about? Like you were saying, there weren't horses showing earlier. Is it not possible that Yah intervened to create horses?
Well, yes, this is what I'm saying. I mean, there's only two explanations for what we know to be true. What we know to be true is found in the rocks. We know that the age of the rocks nuclear chemical analysis, for example, plus the fact of stratigraphy, get that right, that is to say that the way that the rocks are laid down. Certainly there has been some confusion about that, but the Burgess Shales, for example, would be an example of a very ancient seafloor in which these organisms were floating. The Canadian Rockies got pushed up, the mudstone that made the seafloor was then compressed into rock, and along came bugalugs and broke a rock open and found the fossils there. But none of the fossils contained anything more advanced than what was thought to be present. Now, that's sure, it's only a little tiny window on what was possible. There may have been other things there, but no one has ever found anything that gives evidence of a higher form of life. But we do find, as you advance through the rocks, you find the characteristic change. I mean, if you just read a textbook on geology, it's easy to see what's going on. If you go through the rock strata, you'll find that primitive forms of dinosaurs appeared, that you'll find that dinosaurs that flew appeared. You'll find that dinosaurs that had big munchy teeth, like T-Rex, for example, the kids' favourites, appeared. Then you'll find that they all disappeared. And then the next thing you see is little shrew-like animals, which are mammals, which may have and probably did coexist with the dinosaurs, but were not visible. And then these grew up into your horses and elephants and cows and eventually up to man. This makes sense. Right. I somehow suspect that this is true. The only problem that we have is that there's no geological evidence for it.
Evidence.
So if there's no geological evidence for it, that leaves you only two possibilities: punctuated equilibrium caused by chaos, or Yah himself intervened from time to time to actually direct the evolution.
So what you're saying is that at this point in time, there's no evidence in the rock showing that. Is there any chance that we just haven't seen that, or that we have discovered enough that we know that there just isn't any record?
Well, there's always a possibility that you've missed a lot of stuff, but I mean, you would have had to have missed a hell of a lot of stuff, considering every possible creature that would have ever evolved or been created.
Right.
I mean, I really don't believe that would be true.
All right.
Does that make sense?
All right.
So that I think is one point that really Craig put his finger on that is of some significance there. I intuitively believe that what Mike Jean said is true. It's just that demonstrating it is going to be very difficult.
Right. Well, we can always get Frank back and have more discussion on this point at a later date also.
Yeah. Does what I'm saying make sense to you?
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, it makes sense.
Macroevolution is definitely impossible. We've proved that. That's just simply a non-starter. So if macroevolution is not possible, life exists on Earth as we have it today. That means that it's either developed spontaneously from nothing, which is macroevolution again, so that's not possible. Therefore, it had to be created. Right. So it was either created here on Earth or it was created somewhere in space. It was created in space. That's Fred Hoyle's panspermia hypothesis. It could have been brought to Earth. If it was created by a creator in space, that's a sort of a remote possibility. The only question is I'd ask, why do that? Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you take every species and the uniqueness of it, the DNA of it, and all of the makeup of it and how uniquely it's made, the chances of that happening randomly
Impossible.
Right. It's basically impossible.
It's in fact, as we discussed, Fred Hoyle himself did the calculation, and the probability of making even the simplest bacterium was 1 chance in 10 to the 40,000. That means 10 multiplied by itself 40,000 times. It's just impossible. It's vanishingly small. It's just impossible for that to have occurred. I don't think there's any issue with regard to macroevolution as to what's happened. The issue comes into microevolution as to whether Yah managed the evolutionary process step by step along the way. That could account for punctuated equilibrium. Or if he just simply front-loaded the DNA so that all the creatures that we see would climb up the ladder, you know, from very simple organisms like these strange things in the Burgess Shales, up through dinosaurs and all the mammals that have occurred, you know, the prehistoric horses and mammoths and things like that, which are probably just really elephants with just adapted hair, eventually to man. So those are the only two possible solutions. Yah stepped in from time to time along the way to direct the evolution in the way he wanted it, or he allowed it to run by itself from the beginning without that.
Right. I like the part of your theory where he's walking with me, talking with me, and helping me every day just because I need help.
Well, that's right. That may in fact be that he did in fact walk with the animals. He did in fact create them over a period of time.
Right.
That is to say, he intervened regularly to make sure that the evolution went in a particular way.
Right.
Then again, from his point of view, the Cambrian explosion only occurred over a period of 2.6 minutes, whereas for us it was 5 million years. So that means from his point of view, the rest of the time would have been fairly short. In fact, the day of creation from the time of Archaebacteria to the Cambrian explosion was about day four. Day five would have taken it up to the time of either the creation or the manipulation, of Adam's gene. So that's day five. So we have essentially microevolution is then compressed into day five, and then day six is the time of man, when, 6,000 years. So the time between the first day is a lot longer than the time between the second day, the third day, and so forth, so that we end up eventually compressing time down to just 6,000 years for the time of man.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all of this is consistent with what we see in Scripture. The only problem that I'm having is how did we get from the Cambrian explosion to mankind with animal intermediates that we know existed and no longer exist, as well as the sophistication that we see now that we didn't see back in the time of the Cambrian explosion, the time of the Burgess fossils. they're just shales, they're called. That I think is the issue, and I suspect that Yah was not hands on in day five. After all, that was Satan's time, wasn't it?
You said you suspect he is hands on.
I don't suspect he was hands on, but that's only my speculation. I don't know.
Right.
Those are the only two possibilities when you boil it down.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to explain the absence of higher order fossils, for example, in very ancient rocks, and you can't do that.
Right.
So that means he had to intervene along the way, or he pre-programmed it so that it would go the way that I suspect he pre-programmed it because he wanted to give us free will. To give us free will, we must have had a universe that was indeterminate. That is to say that not even he could see the end from the beginning. He could, because his ability to see our time in the future, could see how it happened, but he wouldn't have the ability if he was just sort of sitting back at the very beginning to see exactly how it would work out. That's where quantum mechanics, thermodynamics, and chaos all combine, if you like, to make it impossible to predict what is going to happen in the future. Certainly from our point of view, this is why we can never see the future. Because these sort of things take that ability away from us, but it also takes it away from him. And it's probably the way that he would want it, I think. There's no point in just having someone to explore the universe if you've already done the exploration. It's no fun sort of coming across an interesting scene or something that you wouldn't have expected to happen.
Right.
By yourself or even with somebody if you already knew that it was what was there. So I think to make eternity fun and exciting, this has to be the case. It also has to be the case, incidentally, in his domain, if you think about that as well. That is to say, when whatever dimension he exists, he cannot see his future. He can see our future in his past, because he's so much more energy, so much more mass, if you like. His time slows relative to us so much that we're sort of leaping ahead of him, so that he can then see what happens. But he can't see in his dimension what his future is going to be. So Yah is restricted in many things that he can and can't do. He can't be illogical and or irrational and have a universe, for example, that is logical and rational. I know this sounds a bit strange to most people's ears, but I think if you think about it, that's the only outcome that it can be.
So do you see another program that you would like to do to take some time to do some more research of this and be back on with Craig, that he can, the way he connects the dots and all, to help bring some more clarification to this?
Yeah, that would be a good idea, but I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get any more information concerning geology and paleontology. Paleontology is simply the study in the rocks of the ancient animals.
Right.
It's really a paleontological problem.
So we can talk with Craig and see if we could set that up to go on, you know, to go back and try to cover that area. Is there any other areas that you wanted to cover today that moved on past this point? Some information that you wanted to make sure that you got out about?
Yeah, well, what I can do is I've written, I've copied a part of the original document that I made, and I've pasted it onto the end of this talk that I've given here. If I may, I can read that out. Have you got time to do that, Scott?
Yeah, we got time, definitely.
Okay.
I'm loving what you're saying, so, yeah, continue.
And so that you, does what I say make sense?
It does. Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, what you're saying, it's not beyond my comprehension to what you're saying. Some of the, it's like when I deal with Craig, some of the connections you're making, they make sense. But I'm just not making the same connection at the same moment. So I'm still trying to take the data you're giving me now and turn it around in my head. So that and this is the whole reason I wanted Craig here to begin with, because just the way his mind works, it's definitely a beautiful thing. And I'm a person that I hear something and it sits in my brain for sometimes days before I finally can come up with something to say about it. So
I'm like you, Scott. Oh, that's what that meant.
Yeah, I mean, it could even be like 5 hours from now. I'll be sitting at home and I'll all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute. That's what, you know, listen, that makes way more sense now. And so, and it was the whole reason why I wanted Craig to be here. He's much, the way his brain fires, it works out well for this. And the way, I mean, listening to you two talk was awesome for me. So, by all means, continue on with what you want to say.
I'd like to know what his IQ is. It's certainly way above mine.
Well,
I just got all this information because I've taken the trouble to get it. Otherwise, I'm just like any other ordinary individual. I think Craig thinks in a way that's very different from me. I think in a way that's very different from most other people too, but I think he's way above me in the speed with which he can put sensible concepts together.
It's how quickly he connects the dots.
It's how quickly he can do it, yes.
We agree.
Anyway, I'll just finish off with this, if I may. Said, you, the reader, are near the end of my short overview of the evolution of life on Earth. Questions such as what is life, what is a soul, have not been addressed as they are not directly related to the physical development of life according to the parameters set by the theory of evolution. We have simply assumed that something called life exists as distinct from inanimate objects. The very word inanimate gives a clue, not animated, not able to respond to the environment. Is life then simply the right ordering of molecules and atoms such as a creature, that a creature exists that is able to respond to the environment? If we look at the analogy of a computer, that appears on the surface to be true. Ignoring how the computer came into being for the moment, we know there is an additional component that allows it to interact in a limited way with the environment, that is software. I say limited because our programs are still primitive. Software animates the computer. Software is not physical. If you added a program to a computer, you could not detect even the slightest change in mass. In religious terms, you could call the software a soul. Incidentally, Frank, that's what we were discussing, I think, last Friday. Nefesh and the Nesama.
Okay.
Note that the software did not appear spontaneously in our example of a computer, so could software evolve? At the molecular level of life, that is clearly impossible. Molecules simply interact according to the laws of physics and chemistry. At a higher level of organization, we know, for example, that an amoeba will move away from an unpleasant stimulus or towards a pleasant one, such as food. As we have demonstrated that Yah created the most primitive life, he doubtless included programs of animation. Logically, then, since microevolution is front-loaded and there is no further input from the creator, this is where the problem occurs, of course, then the ability to evolve a soul for all forms of life must have been front-loaded as well. Even some plants have very primitive avoidance mechanisms, though we don't have triffids yet. Thus, the physical microevolution and the metaphysical microevolution must have gone hand in hand. Primitive man eventually evolved with a sophisticated program, which in Hebrew is called a nefesh. In computer terminology, this is an operating system. In man, a very advanced and sophisticated system is still only an operating system. To get past the point of responding only to the basic needs of food, shelter, sex, and survival, primitive man needed something else. He needed, in Hebrew, the neshama, which in computer terms is a plug-in, or if you like, another program. The neshama was first given to Adam, and from him the rest of humanity. This gave us the ability to think abstractly, to form concepts without apparent benefit and beyond the basic needs. It gave us the ability to wonder about the woods and trees around us without seeing them only as a source of danger or food. We could wonder at the sun, moon, and stars and think about how they got there. We could think of a creator for everything we see, hear, and feel. It gave the ability to detect the difference between right and wrong, good and evil, and it gave the ability to choose between them. It gave free will. With a neshama, we are still animals, but with the ability to raise ourselves above the beast and to interact with the creator. The neshama, then, would have been transmitted in the same way a nefesh is transmitted after Yah gave the neshama to Adam and Chava. So when they were ejected from the garden, they mated with the surrounding men and women, transmitting the neshama down through their generations. To do this, the neshama gene would have to have been dominant. The ability to think and plan ahead that the neshama gave these people meant that they could and did wipe out their human rivals, both with the neshama and without. So then we came to the time of Noah. Evolution, by definition, is a brutal process. Life for most is short, brutal, and over quickly. So why did Yah create the universe in this way? I believe he did because to carry out his purpose, he had to. Muslims believe their God, that is Satan, is unlimited in anything he can do. His will is arbitrary and fickle. To them he can make black, white, 2 plus 2 equals 5. Such a God would be the very definition of chaos. Even the process of thinking or logical thought could not occur, because in our world we rely on the laws of physics to remain constant and unchanging. The real God is in fact constrained by parameters that could be called universal. Logic and reason must be universal parameters for order to exist. Likewise, 2 plus 2 must always equal 4. Not a round 4, not a fuzzy 4, just 4. If Yah wanted to reproduce himself by having a family, how would he do it? The duality of order and disorder are universal. God is a God of order. He wants an ordered family. He could just create a clone of himself and get a family that way, but that would be like addressing yourself in a mirror. Your other self always answers back in the same way you would, and you know exactly how, even before the other self has opened its mouth, and is to all intents and purposes identical in thought, actions and appearance. That is clearly pointless. You might as well stay alone as have an echo chamber of your own thoughts. In a way, it might be another form of hell. So a being slightly different from you to be interesting, but with desire for order, must be created. But how? By creating a being with your ability to use logic and reason that has the knowledge of order and disorder, and make a choice between them. A few sentences I'll leave out which aren't relevant. Those who have an inquiring mind, imagination, enjoy discovery, have the geography and genes implying a family background that allows an open mind and are willing to invest time to seek out a creator, will do so, as they will come to know there must be one. His name is Yahweh, and his means of communication is the Torah. Those without the above characteristics will not and will be discarded. They may have a pleasant but limited life, and after that they and their nephesh are no more. And for that I've quoted Mizmor's Psalms 145, 5-6 and 103. Those with the correct characteristics are who Yah is looking for. They are like but slightly different from him, able to think and act independently, yet enjoying order all the time. So in this sense, microevolution is a sieve filtering out the gold from the dross. He knows his family members and will act to protect each one. He doesn't know the rest because they do not know or want to know him. Would you act to protect the family of someone hostile to you, someone who may be a member of Satan's family, for example, when you have your own family to protect? The dross is discarded, yet the dross, that is thinking humans but with the wrong way of thinking, would of course like to live forever in the way they think is best. Who wouldn't? So when Yah appeared in diminished form as Yahusha, he selected those with the right way of thinking and at the same time spoke to the others in such a way that they could not be saved, as they did not understand who he was, and certainly did not and could not know him. That is Matan Yah 13:15 and Yah Hakonan 12:40. Much of the above is speculation on my part and therefore could be wrong. Yada, the author of Yada Yahweh, an introduction to God and questioning Paul, has made specific predictions based upon the Torah, prophets and Psalms. If you, the reader, decide not to accept some or all of what he and all those who have contributed to the understanding of Yah's word have written, that's okay. That's your choice. You may recall that in a section on self-organization, I castigated those who put forward scientific hypotheses that could never be tested. Such ideas are science fiction, not science. However, what we have written is a testable hypothesis. Not directly, but indirectly. You have to wait no longer than October 2033 to see if we are correct. If we are, Yahusha will return and any arguments about evolution, physical or metaphysical, will be moot. If we are wrong, then life will continue until we all die in a nuclear conflagration or we die naturally, after which we will know nothing, and of course not care whether you think we're nuts or not. Either way, there's only 18 years to go from the time this was written. Before then, I believe you will see signs along the way that should make you think. And there's one final thought. As a theory, macroevolution is one of the adversary's greatest triumphs. It gives those who hate Yah an intellectual basis for their belief in the religion of man and a convincing story to mislead children and students, leading them away from the greatest gift they could receive. For indeed, superficially and even at a deeper level, the theory is enticing. It is only when examined at the molecular level that it falls apart and its satanic origins become visible to those with eyes to see.
Do you have a place where people can find what you wrote? I know you sent me a copy of it, and I've been following along as you've been reading it.
It's on Frank's site.
On Frank's site? Okay. And Frank, what?
That's correct, isn't it?
You can actually find it on www.poweronhigh.com. And on the left-hand navigational side at the bottom, you'll see it says Woast Post. That's W-O-A-S-T, capital P-O-A-S-T, Woast Post. And that is a place where you can post documents, and you'll find Roy's full evolution document there, as well as the one from today's broadcast. And so that's the place you can find it.
Well, we got about 30 seconds here. Roy, thank you for coming on and sharing. Frank, thanks for stepping in and helping me out here, because, again, I'm sitting here. I'm still kind of trying to process things. We'll get Craig back on with you, Roy, next time.
Did you have any questions about the last bit that I read out? Anything that was obviously that you wanted to ask questions about, or that you thought might not be right?
Not at the moment.
Okay. If you do, let me know, and I'll see if I can address them. But thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk today. It's certainly been very revealing for me.